A weekend act of vandalism at a historic Jewish cemetery in University City has produced expressions of community outrage. The vandalizing of scores of headstones at the cemetery occurred at a time when there have been numerous recent bomb threats at dozens of Jewish community centers around the country, including St. Louis. The spate of anti-Semitic incidents is causing concern and alarm. The local investigation has produced no arrests, and still undetermined is whether the local incident is a case of malicious mischief or a hate crime. Joining me in studio to take a closer look are Karen Oresti, the regional director of the Anti-Defamation League of Missouri and Southern Illinois, Lynn Whittles is president and CEO of the Jewish Community Center, and Andrew Rehfeld is the president and CEO of the St. Louis Jewish Federation. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thanks.
It's been a difficult week for all of you and for all of us, hasn't it, watching this this story unfold. Let me get the response to from each of you. I expect it will be similar to the question of an explanation as to why this is. I'll start with you, Karen. Why is this going on now, here and elsewhere?
I think there are layers of reasons, but what we're starting to see is a building on probably what is the last 18 months to 2 years of increased rhetoric around people who are targeted, marginalized communities, whether Jewish, Muslim, refugees, broad immigrant categories. And it has an online component. The nastiness online is pretty high. And then we start to see from there an increase in school-based events and things happening in communities and workplaces. Add in the rhythm of the bomb threats. An ADL National received a bomb threat yesterday in our offices as well.
Here locally or nationally?
Not here in our national office on the East Coast.
I heard the director on the radio this morning talking about that.
Which is startling. I mean, we certainly know what it feels like in that regard. And then the vandalism. And I think for that, the nature of the photo that was taken from the helicopter, which showed the expanse and the level of the violence, I think that struck a lot of people. Mm. So it's a moving train, and the question is, when does it stop?
Yeah, a good question, and we certainly aren't even close to an answer at this particular point.
Right.
Lynn, what's your take? Do you have anything to add to what Karen's just said?
Yes, yeah, so the Jewish Community Center here and across the country has really established a reputation of being open to everybody in the community. And although we were founded by the Jewish community here many years ago, we really pride ourselves on being welcome and open to everybody. We are amazed and quite honestly touched by the expressions of support and just interest in what has been going on. Sometimes bad things bring out wonderful results, and that's what we found at the J. We're really pleased to have gotten all of those comments.
Among the wonderful results, I think, and I certainly wanted to bring this up at some point, is the way the Muslim community in St. Louis has reacted to this. Andy, the last figure I saw was $110,000 has been raised, you know, just with a snap of the finger to help deal with the situation.
Don, it's heartening, and thank you for bringing that up. The Jewish Federation of St. Louis, like my colleague Lynn at the Jewish Community Center, we've been here for over a century. And what we're seeing now with the Muslim community's support and the support from around the country and around all communities is turning what was really a dreadful act into something very, very positive. And so I see that as a terrific step. I don't track the other groups, and I've been so encouraged by the many that are leading it. The Jewish Federation has a fund that's specifically for this purpose at jfedstl.org. We've raised, as of 24 hours ago, and I haven't been back I haven't checked in today. Things have been going so quickly. But as of yesterday, we had raised over $80,000 from 800 individual donors from across the world. And I think it speaks to that kind of interfaith and intercommunity support that these acts of violence are bringing about.
Has the damage at the cemetery been repaired? I understand movement was very quick.
It was very quick, and we're very pleased by that. All the headstones have been put up, and they're being now resealed. And Anita Fagenbaum, who's the director of the cemetery, has just been extraordinary with her leadership of that institution.
What do you make of the visit yesterday? I'll go back to you, Karen, of the vice president and the governor, and their role in the aftermath.
I think we were glad from our perspective to see that attention. I know that there are those who disagree with me on that one. I think we had been fairly strong in seeking some confirmation from the administration that they were really paying attention to the significant increase in anti-Semitism about which we were concerned. So to have the vice president there to acknowledge that, to use the language, to follow up what the president had said the day before, and to be there physically to see it was very important. Beyond that, action is important. So it's not just about the words. It is about what the White House can do in its capacity to develop policy, to work with law enforcement, to talk about education, and to provide the really necessary and strong leadership to send that message that any of this, when it's a targeted community, is going to be unacceptable. And the governor, I think, has taken a strong lead on that on behalf of a show-me state perspective.
And of course, the governor was there as well as the state's first Jewish governor.
Correct.
So it had a particular meaning for him, above and beyond his office.
I think he talked about the families he knew and the connections to the community and the cemetery. This one touched a lot of folks. This was not in some ways just about a Jewish cemetery. Folks mm-hmm. who have relatives who've passed and who go to cemeteries to visit them and remember the memories mm-hmm. Can relate to this on lots of different levels. And I think that's part of why the empathy factor in this and the outreach of support has been so substantial.
Don, I want to confirm what Karen just said and reinforce that about the messages that were made. The Federation organized the community in order to do this kind of work. I want to give a specific credit to Rory Pekernice, who is the head of the Jewish Community Relations Council. We were on the phone with the governor and extended the invitation to him, and his interest in not only being present to speak, but to say, hey, why don't we do a mobilization to clean up the cemetery, was so welcomed. The governor, Governor Greitens, immobilized his team from Mission Continues to help make the volunteer efforts meaningful and impactful. The security estimates, about 2,500 people showed up. So his presence there and his willingness not only to just show up and, sure, photo op, whatever, but to say something meaningful and do something meaningful to the community was important. We have gotten a lot of pushback from the vice president showing up. That was unexpected. From our view, he said the right things, and it was good to have him as an elected representative there, and it was important. I will say one last thing to Karen's thing. Three ways to respond to this. You have to name it, you have to condemn it, and you have to do something about it. And the naming of it and condemning of it happened yesterday, and we were really proud of that. To Karen's point, we have to see something now being done about it.
Lynn Whittle's looking forward. What would you like to see from the governor and from the state with regard to situations like this?
You know, I think the more that our elected officials, as Andrew said, name it, condemn it, and do something about it, it is time for us to do something about it as a community. And I think it's important that those of us who live in this world know that this is unacceptable. And we cannot challenge the places where we feel comfortable, the places that we consider to be our homes away from home. And it's time for all those people who find this behavior abhorrent to talk about it and to make sure that people know it is not acceptable.
I wonder if talk's going to be enough. I mean, we've established, I think, early on that there has been an atmosphere the last 18 months or so that's kind of an enabling atmosphere, if I can put it that way. It's having the crazies come out from under the rocks and start to do some of the things like this. Talk enough?
No, but it is a good place to begin, and I think we're beyond the stage for talk. I think with all of the bomb threats across a number of Jewish agencies, including our own, and just the acts of hatred that seem to be acceptable in certain aspects of our community, we need people with power to speak out against it and then to take the next step.
And if you think about the actions that you have to take, you know, I think there are three most important ones: to educate, to mobilize, and to give or to invest. The education about toleration and about diversity against hate and violence is important. the mobilization like what happened yesterday and like the work that all of us do, and the investment to recognize that there are security needs and that there are restoration needs that we have to mobilize and to invest in the community.
Karen, I think it's important to note that it's places like the Jewish Community Center that create the platforms for all members of our community to come together. We are so proud of that. And if you come to the J, you'll see exactly what that means in action. You'll see people from all different walks of life come together.
Karen, when I asked if conversation was enough, you were shaking your head. You obviously believe much more needs to be done.
Well, you can start from a policy perspective. So Missouri's hate crime statute, which has actually been around a long time, is something that needs to be lifted up. We've been doing education for law enforcement for a lot of years on that level, but we probably could be doing more. What is a hate crime? And if that's one of the debates that's going on relative to the cemetery.
Yeah, I want to talk more about that.
Well, and the difficulty is that people want an answer right now. Mm-hmm. And I think University City PD is doing a very vigilant job of reviewing what evidence is available. And they need to do that very carefully. And so education for law enforcement is one thing. Engagement with the community and law enforcement is another. Using the statutes that are available. Having strong policies like that are appropriate. But also engaging with people who are not like you. We have a group that we've been staffing for a while, the U.S. Attorney's Hate Crimes Task Force. We've talked about it in the past. Mm-hmm. And that is folks in interfaith, in education, in all levels of law enforcement. And they get together. They talk about these issues. By the way, it's an open table. So if people want to reach my office, they're welcome to join. We meet quarterly.
I'll put a link to your site.
And yeah, I'll give you that info. And the idea is to figure out tangible ways from a community basis all the way up to create those opportunities to break down the bias and stereotype that keeps us apart. When stuff like that happens, we do better.
You've been at this for a while. We've talked about this in the past.
Right.
Does your gut tell you that this incident at the cemetery was a hate crime?
My initial reaction was no, but I have learned over the last year in particular that I have made more wrong decisions about things like that than I've been right. And so I really don't want to I don't want to speculate. There isn't any evidence out there right now, any markers or left behind hate literature or any sort of indicator that would tell us something. What we have are some of these headstones that, while older and more vulnerable physically, weighed 1,000 pounds. Mm-hmm. So you have whatever the number is, 150, 180. The physical aspect of gaining entry over the fence and getting into the property and actually doing something had an intentionality behind it that leaves me a little puzzled about what this really was about.
They're not 10-year-olds.
They're not 10-year-olds, and it may be something much more intentional and organized over the long term. And again, sometimes these things are truly impulsive by people who tend to be thrill seekers just trying to make a very public point, which they certainly have. ADL offered a $10,000 reward on Monday afternoon for information leading to the arrest and conviction. I'm hoping that jogs somebody's memory.
Andy, do you have any sense as to the motive of this crime?
Yeah. So I have no more information than Karen,
sure,
or Lynn or you do. But I would say two things about it. Number one, I think our guts are very, to Karen's point, very unreliable sources of these things. Number two, there's a general tendency to map things onto other things that are salient. And I think it's easy to frame what's happening as anti-Semitism. We need to be cautious. It's most likely the work that is not that, except for the reasons that Karen said. But I will say something I said yesterday. At some point, it doesn't matter. You put the pieces together. You put the bomb threats that we've had through the community. You put the acts of other threatening things that have happened, some of which are not publicly known. And there's a pattern that does emerge that it has not been here before. And it has been ramping up certainly since the fall. And we need to be very careful and studious about responding to it. And we also need to leave to social science putting all the data, getting away from the gut so that we're tracking what's really happening.
Well, and if I may, so that's a key point. So regardless of the intent, the impact is substantial, right? The impact is as if it had been the most intentionally anti-Semitic and insidious of anti-Semitic incidents. And what the community is feeling right now is that it was intentional. You have to validate that. Mm-hmm. And you can separate that and the community building and the educational activity that takes place after from the legal aspects of if this is in fact a – at a minimum, it's property damage, trespass, and felony vandalism, right? Beyond that, what will it be?
Yeah. Hate crime is a difficult thing to prove, isn't it? It's very, very difficult for law enforcement.
It's all about the intent. It's all about the motivation.
And, you know, if I could, I think that the focusing on motivation, while it's important legally, is what is part of the problem with our political discourse today. We need to focus on effects of things that happen. We need to focus on how they are impressed upon us emotionally. And we need to react to those actual effects.
Lynn, you have a lot of traffic over at your place.
We do.
What are people saying? How are they reacting to this?
You know, there have been a number of reactions. A lot of people feel even greater resolve to keep coming to the J. This is their home. This is where they want to be. And they are unwavering in their support. There have been a few people who have said, I feel uncomfortable in a place that I used to. And that's jarring to people. So we've heard a little bit of everything. We do our best to make sure they have access to us, that we tell them what we can. But I think for the most part, people feel this is my J and I'm coming back. And right. We're thrilled to see that.
I know this is something you won't talk about and shouldn't talk about, and that is the fact that you now have to take precautions when something like this happens. I assume that that is happening out there. Just
Absolutely.
Another level of something for you to worry about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that, Karen, in terms of hearing of this wave of incidents over a period of weeks and months?
One of the things we have responsibility for is raising awareness of security needs in the Jewish community. Although over the past years here, because of unique incidents like the arsons against the churches that occurred twice, actually, last October and again, I think it was the previous October, we've now been convening security folks to do education for all houses of worship. And now I think we're going to have to talk security for cemeteries in a unique way that may be different for other institutions. And that's something folks just don't want to think about. And yet, security is something you practice a lot, you plan for, you structure, and then you don't ever have to deal with, hopefully. But it has to be intentional, and it has to be top-down and bottom-up. And unfortunately, the Jewish community has been dealing with this for a long time. So our capacity to share it with our other religious brothers and sisters is actually one of the positive things of the community building aspect.
And to that end, we actually got have been in close contact with the Islamic Foundation of Greater St. Louis and the Jewish Federation that has a built-out security function for the community has offered to provide that support to them, and so we will continue to do that.
A very active collaboration, cooperation among these various religious communities in
Absolutely.
St. Louis.
That's
I think
St.
it's probably
Louis.
Exceptional in many ways. Lynn, one of the reasons I asked you about what people were saying over there is that we've had some internal dialogue here about how I think we all understand how people of a certain generation would react having gone through the worst of the worst and be familiar with the Holocaust. But there are an awful lot of young people out there for whom that is just a memory and a history lesson, if you will, of course, certain family members, of course. How about young people reacting to this?
You know, young people have grown up in a level of kind of a different security awareness. You can no longer walk into the airport without going through the metal detector and having your bags checked. I think they're used to that. So we don't hear it as much from younger people. We hear it. I think people feel personally offended that somebody has come into their home. And I've said that before. We have not heard too many complaints, although, you know, we listen to every one of them. This is a different world we live in, and we know that. And we are working with the Jewish Federation. We're working with our members and our funders, and we are asking them to step up and be with us now, because now is when we really need them.
Annie, what's your take on that with regard to the young people and their perception of what's happening?
We are dealing with it because we run the community's Holocaust Museum and Learning Center.
Sure.
And the museum was based 20 years ago to do two things. Number one, to tell the story through the eyes of St. Louisans who were there. survivors in particular, and to do so in a way that expands onto broader issues of social justice. And that first piece, the docents who used to take people through the museum who were Holocaust survivors are unfortunately passing on. It's just a natural occurrence of life. And we are having to reevaluate how we teach the lessons of the Holocaust to that new generation that you just mentioned that doesn't know from their, even their grandparents, mm-hmm. but whose great-grandparents may have been there. And as the survivor generation is being lost, the leadership of the Holocaust Museum and Learning Center is looking at new ways to navigate that.
Mm-hmm. Karen, your thoughts on the youth aspect of this?
I last night had the opportunity to spend some time with the youth group at the Shari Emeth, which is a synagogue mm-hmm. out in the county. A fair number of whom have relatives who were buried at Chesed Shel Emeth and who were there yesterday afternoon for the cleanup. And one of the things we do is we engage in a variety of activities and have a conversation. And two of the questions that stuck with me from last night, and these kids are thoughtful, was are you aware of your friends who feel they have been affected by anti-Semitism? And it's an activity where they have to stand up. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them stood up. Mm-hmm. The follow-up question was, stand up if you feel you've experienced something that you call anti-Semitism. And I would say probably maybe all but two or three. And they looked around the room, and I looked around the room, and I thought, oh, this is not good. So we broke it down. We didn't have a whole lot of time. But how they define anti-Semitism is pretty broad, but when they internalize the things they're experiencing, whether they come as a result of family dynamics or in school or out in the community, they're hyper aware. And I think it's necessary for us to do quite a bit of education and talking and empowering them so that sense of I am and strengthen that identity allows them to have the capacity to challenge back in a good way and say, well, you know, what you just said or what happened around here is really troubling for me as a Jewish person. I need to talk to you about it. And that's just not easy, sure. Jewish or otherwise. Yeah. And so that's going to be part of a chunk of the future work that we're going to have to spend some time on.
Lynn, one of the most heartbreaking elements of the incident at the cemetery has been watching some of the people, the relatives of people who were buried there, and talking about the fact that many of them, I don't know how many, but are survivors of the Holocaust who are buried there. And to think that now that is being desecrated in the manner it has been, absolutely heartbreaking to watch.
Indeed. I do want to say something about the young people. You know, they live with such a commitment to social justice. There was a group yesterday I noticed from Washington University Hillel. They knew nobody in that cemetery. They were there because they knew that they had to speak out. And I think that really speaks to what the younger generation is all about. I mean, they are activists, and they have high ideals, and they invest in their own time when they believe it's necessary. I was really thrilled to see that.
I'm just curious. It was just a couple of weeks ago in which the world observed Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Yes.
And Karen knows where I'm going with this. And the White House put out a statement acknowledging the day, but forgetting or refusing or just not mentioning the fact that the victims primarily were Jewish. You save your thought, Karen. Let me go to Andy over here. What was your reaction to that?
I thought you were going to.
I wanted to pick you off on that one.
The absence was not only noticeable, it was reiterated by the White House that issued a statement that it was very explicitly not to include the Jews because they wanted to be more diverse and more universal. I've learned in this job from people in my own community who identify as on the right wing of the political spectrum that such appeals to diversity threaten to undermine the very distinctiveness of the Holocaust. And I don't just mean that from the right. That's true of a Holocaust education. I think it is noteworthy. I think that the Holocaust was a distinctly Jewish event that also affected millions and millions of other peoples, of gays, of lesbians, of anyone that was not of the Aryan race.
Right. Karen?
I think our initial response was that it was puzzling, and I think we went from puzzling to disturbing, and I think by the time we ended up in the conversation before the president finally acknowledged and used the words anti-Semitism, mind-boggling, was the phrase we were milling around with. And it doesn't make sense. It what Andrew says is right on. And I think we need to hold our leadership accountable to say things as they are. And that's going to be really important in the future.
If I could, just that's where I said, you know, you got to name it as the first step. Name it, condemn it, do something about it. If you can't name it, you don't know what you're fighting.
Mm-hmm. Linda, kind of brings us back to where we started our conversation here, that being that the dialogue, the national dialogue over a period of time may be in part or totally responsible for what's been going on, but to ignore a basic fact maybe is one of the pieces of this puzzle.
For sure. We have to acknowledge that there are people out there who feel differently than we do, who live in a different world than we do. And I think, if nothing else, that's what I learned from the political discourse of the last election cycle, that there are people who really live in a different America than I think I do. And that scares me. That disturbs me, but it gives and it challenges me, quite honestly, to try to understand it. And we all have to work against it. We cannot live in a world of hate.
Yeah. Going to have to end it there, folks. Interesting discussion. Karen, we'll be seeing you again in a couple of weeks when the boss, I guess, is coming in.
Boss is coming in for a visit.
And will be a part of this program.
I
want to thank you all for being with us. Karen Oresti, thank you. Nice to see you again.
Good to be here.
Andrew Rehfeld, thank you for being with us. And Lynn Whittles, thank you for being with us. Keep the faith. Keep the faith.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.